हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 63. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time, Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. Then rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, Lord Brahma looked up at Mukunda. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated, and his body trembling, very humbly began, with faltering words, to offer praise to Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada concludes, Brahma, being very joyful, began to shed tears, and he washed the lotus feet of Krishna with his tears. Repeatedly he fell and rose as he recalled the wonderful activities of the Lord. After repeating obeisances for a long time, Brahma stood up and smeared his hands over his eyes. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word lochane indicates that with his two hands he wiped the two eyes on each of his four faces. Seeing the Lord before him, Brahma began to offer prayers with great humility, respect, and attention. Chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. Pratigya. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Chapter 14 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Srila Sukadeva Goswami question 10.13 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.49. King Parikit said, O Brahmana, how could the cowherd women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love they never felt even for their own children? Please explain this. Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question in verses 50 through 54. The rhetorical questions in verses 2, 7, 9, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18, 21, 28, 35, 44, and 57 do not come under this study. Serious. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the prayers Brahma offered to Lord Krishna, who is also known as Nanda Nandana. For his satisfaction, Brahma first praised the beauty of the Lord's transcendental limbs, and then declared that his original identity of sweetness is even more difficult to comprehend than his opulence. Only by the devotional process of hearing and chanting transcendental sounds received from Vedic authorities can one realize the personality of Godhead. It is fruitless to try to realize God through processes outside the scope of Vedic authority. The mystery of the personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, is inconceivable. It is even more difficult to understand than the impersonal Supreme. Thus, only by the mercy of God can one understand His glory. So understanding the impersonal is already difficult, but it's kind of a generic that most everybody can relate to. The jnanis can relate to the aspect of the unlimitedness and lacking of material qualities. These two aspects, even the materialist can conceive of the Brahman. Right? But that's as far as it goes. Because we see here is that unlimited they catch, but they can't understand form. And lacking material qualities, that they can catch, but not that there's transcendental qualities. Right? So, to go beyond that and actually understand how he's God, how he does everything, that only the devotee can understand. And then the devotees in opulence, that's easier to understand. But his position as sweetness, that's the most difficult. Right? Because it's all depending upon devotion, depending on surrender. So that's the difficulty. See, understanding that there's something unlimited with no beyond the material qualities, that is, you know, one can gain. Right? Why that can be there? Because of the nature of the living entity, of the eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Right? So, because of that, then the living entity in the material world has two illusions, right? Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. So one is they think it's eternal, the material world, so they can relate to that there's something eternal in fate. And that then there's the, how you say, Ananda Brahma, that you can actually get happiness in the material world. It means by putting in a little effort, you can actually make the material world perfect. Right? So, since this is the material world, then spiritual being the opposite of that, by that mundane calculation, therefore having no qualities, then, you understand? So even the materialist, because of his mundaneness, he can have these two understandings of the Lord. But it's only as there's surrender that one can understand more. Because one can be surrendered up to the platform of pure devotion, but still maintain the principle of liberation, which is in connection to the Lord. Right? Same place, same form, same opulence, same an associate. And that attachment then is spiritual, but it limits one to the point of Aishwarya. But only if there's that full surrender, then that sweetness can be appreciated. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's in another category. Just like Dwait Advait can be understood not so in a difficult way. It's in this case it's two, in this case it's one. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just like, well, yeah. So, but to understand that both of these are simultaneously functioning at once, that inconceivable position, that's more difficult to understand. So for that, there has to be that complete surrender. Right? So does that make sense? Otherwise, you can get part of that, like in Dwarka and Mathura. They have an appreciation of the sweetness, but they always fall back to the Aishwarya. Because Dwarka is known as Vaikuntha. It's just your greatest manifestation of Vaikuntha. Right? But Braj is then something else. Finally realizing, thus only by the mercy of God can one understand his glories. Right? Finally realizing this, Brahma repeatedly condemned his own actions and recognized that Lord Sri Krishna, the ultimate shelter of the universe, is Brahma's own father, the original Narayana. In this way, Brahma begged the Lord's forgiveness. So, yeah. So he, because before he thought, let me check and see his glories by his own potency. But then he understood that's not going to work. Right? It's only by the Lord's grace. Brahma then glorified the inconceivable opulence of the personality of Godhead and described the ways in which Brahma and Shiva differ from Lord Vishnu. The reason for the Supreme Lord's appearance in various species of demigods, animals, and so on. The eternal nature of the pastimes of the personality of Godhead and the temporality of the material world. By knowing the Supreme Personality of Truth, the individual spirit soul can achieve liberation from bondage. In actuality, however, both liberation and bondage are unreal. For it is only from the living entity's conditioned outlook that his bondage and liberation are produced. Right? So, this whole idea that we're liberated or conditioned. Technically, the soul is in its natural state. It's always unliberated. So it's not that it becomes liberated. It always is. But it's just by illusion that it takes on the concept I'm conditioned. I have this body, I have the gross, I have the subtle, I have all these things. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why in the material world, because of this consciousness, therefore, then there has to be, or there's all the social structure, all the different things like this. There's morality, there's economics. It's because of the illusion of the conditioned nature. So that's why in the Vaishnava tradition, someone does something wrong, then the solution is increase Krishna consciousness. Because why does one do something wrong? Because there's illusion. So how do you combat illusion? By Krishna consciousness. Right? So if there's a problem, you remove the problem. What's the problem? Ignorance. How do you remove that? Devotional service. Right? So it's actually totally an illusion that we think that something done wrong in the material world, whatever it may be, some injustice, some unright thing is done, then it requires a material arrangement for punishment and for correction. That's actually true illusion and materialism. But because it's popular, therefore the Shastras then give things that would be in line with what is actually the problem. Right? The particular mundane, conditioned wrong that you've done, then there's a form that you could follow. But the only purpose of following that is if one understands the root cause of it, how, in which aspect one is not God conscious. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, there's a physical offense, so therefore then there's a physical reaction. So the point is that physically we should be engaged in Krishna service. That's the solution. By creating difficulties for the physical situation actually will not produce any good for anyone anywhere. It's just that people feel, it's just like if I think, if I get this, I will be happy. So in the same illusion, we think if that person gets this punishment, then everything will be right in the world. Right, we understand? So now we're coming into this level. So now we can start to go beyond the conditioned viewpoint. Because the conditioned viewpoint is only useful in as much as you can engage it in Krishna's service. And that is it. Right? So we have a particular conditioned nature. So we see, since I'm supposed to engage myself, body, mind, and words, in Krishna's service, so therefore, what kind of body do I have? What kind of mind? What kind of intelligence? And then, accordingly, then what services go naturally with that? So Varnashram describes that very well. So there's no guesswork. It's simply being aware in self-realization of also then what the conditioned nature is. But knowing that it's not the soul that we engage in Krishna's service, but knowing that the body, mind, and intelligence is what it is, therefore it's engaged according to its nature. Right? So whatever we may think, a hammer is a hammer. We can be a pure unalloyed devotee. We can be on the platform of Mahabhav. It's still a hammer. We can be the grossest, most disgusting materialist like that, breaking every rule that there is. It's still a hammer. So we have to get that through our heads. We need to take the hammer, whack yourself a little bit with it. Maybe that will help. You know, as we're conditioned, identify with the body, it might help. But if we're on the spiritual platform, it's not going to do anything. Right? So in other words, the hammer is a hammer. You don't put screws into the wall with a hammer, unless you're an Indian carpenter. Right? So, other than that, you use a screwdriver for that. So, that's the way it is. So yes, we are not the body, but the body, strangely enough, is the body. So that's why we use it. And then how will we know how to use the body? Because we've been through 8,400,000, how do you know how this one works? That's what Shastra defines. So therefore, if we're actually in knowledge, we understand we don't know. And if we're in illusion, then we think, I know what this body, I know what to do with this. So that's the thing. In reality, then there is no point. It's just realizing you're already liberated. So that's why in Mano, he makes the point that all these things are just illusion. They're not important. But because for the general mass of public, it is extremely important because they do identify that they're the body. Right? Therefore, there are punishments. But in the Vaishnav society, they're not taking seriously. Why? Because the only cure is Krishna consciousness. So for the gross materialists, then the government deals with them, the punishments that are due. It works because they get purified. It won't change their consciousness, but at least brings their position to a more purified state so that there's more chance of taking advantage of proper association and doing the right thing. But a good chance they won't. Just like the elephant takes a bath, scrubs very nicely, comes out, takes first thing they do, take dirt, throw it all over their body. So that's the materialist. So for the devotee, then, since they don't do that, then the prayaschitta has an effect. But the prayaschitta, the only prayaschitta that has a real effect is the chanting of the holy name. And that's what Manu says. So that's the whole point, is that if there's a difficulty, increase hearing and chanting, associating with those who are more advanced. That's the only thing that will correct anything. And if we think otherwise, then it is total illusion. And this is coming from the mouth of Lord Brahma, so you kind of got to take it as authority. We may not like it. You know, some of our modern YouTube gurus may not like it, you know, in the way of your modern theories of psychology and all that. But this is coming from the not only the mouth of Brahma, all four mouths of Brahma, right? You know, so even more authority. Yes.
So this disease that we think we the judge, jury, and executioner.
No, you forgot prosecutioner.
Oh, prosecutioner.
Yeah, prosecutions. See, the emotional satisfaction is in prosecution and execution. Judge and jury, then that's just something you have to do because somebody has to do it. But the emotional satisfaction comes in prosecution and execution.
So basically that's just still the aspect of not wanting to relinquish the control throughout the whole process.
Yes.
It's not even that.
Because the point is, how do we judge unless we judge by Shastra? So that means the information we take has to be based on the standards of Shastra. The judgments, how we go through those things, have to be according to Shastra. The jury has to make their decisions based on Shastra. And then what is to be done according to the Shastra directions, according to that particular impropriety, then that has to be there. So then if it's all based on Shastra, then it has some meaning. But if it's not based on Shastra, then it's simply mental speculation. Then it's like you're saying, it's just the desire to control and enjoy. I want to enjoy in a particular way, this person's getting in the way of that, so there must be adjudication. It has nothing to do with actual real justice. Because they say, no, it's just, everybody knows. But does everybody know? You go door to door and you take your questionnaire and go door to door and ask about this, what would you think? And you'll find so many different opinions. So it's not that this is the way it is. Yes, this is how I think, and one or two of my friends, if I even have them, that agree with me, then that's the world. Right? When someone says everybody thinks like this, that means I think like this, and the one or two people I've talked to that were willing to agree with it, then that's a quorum. Right? The quorum for everybody, or the whole world, or you know, it's universally understood, is a quorum of basically minimum two, but generally maximum three or four. Because that's as far as people like that have friends anyway.
So this disease of, sometimes we fall into this disease of pointing to push for so-called transparency.
But what does transparency mean? You know, transparency means like that quote that the lady was wearing in Blade Runner. That's transparency. You know what I'm saying? What do you mean by transparency? Because I only want to know, so transparency, so should I tell you, you know, should we get out a measure, you know, what color the stool was this morning, the consistency, you know, the pH factor and stuff like that, you know, get into it. You know, what are they talking about? So it's only areas that concerns them. It's not about actual real facts. It's just about what concerns the particular individual. You know what I'm saying? And it's only about the people that they want to know about transparency. As far as themselves, transparency, then you generally, the people that use transparency and talk transparency are the people that they themselves are kind of like trying to look through a lead, you know, wall or something like that, you know, one of those radioactive shields or something like that. They're the most untransparent. The people that are transparent don't talk transparency. They'll talk being straightforward, honesty, you know, doing what you say. They'll talk about qualities. Here, transparency is just a political tool to get done what you want. Because if I can find, I can't get the guy now, but if I get enough facts, I can. So transparency means I should have the access to get what facts I can so that I can do politically to this person what I want. That's your, you know, literal translation of transparency. There's all this other stuff. What does it mean, transparent? Why does it have to be transparent? Oh, we must know everything. Why do you have to know everything? Does everybody know everything about you? What are you cooking for dinner tonight? Why did you choose that? How much did it cost? You know, what's the cost efficiency between that? You mean you actually went and got that from that place across town? That's so expensive. You could have gone to the local shop right here. Maybe they didn't have this good ingredients. Why are you wasting money? Are they going to go through that? No. So they don't want transparency. It's just a political tool. So it's not actually about Dharma. They make it sound like Dharma, that it's about truth and all these nice things. But it's not. It's simply about politics. It's very straightforward. Right? Does that make sense? But the problem is they'll attack someone, and then when they're rebuffed on that, then they'll show that they're the victim. It's the standard method. It's the standard, you know, how you say, uncultured political method. Because they can't stand up for their position. They're not willing to go down with the ship. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of, it's just a tactic to get done whatever they want. So it's purely political. But politics doesn't sound good, right? Not in the modern scenario. Previously, politic had some status. You know, somebody has good politic, you know, he's okay, you know, he's smart, he's intelligent, he's practical, he knows what he's doing. But nowadays, the people don't want to hear that. So you have to make it sound like it's Dharma, though it absolutely isn't. Because Dharma is because it's the laws of God and you're following to because you're supposed to. This is, I'm doing it because it matches what is good for me. You know what I'm saying? So it's actually a very, very mundane platform. And so this point of adjudicating and judging people on your own standards is not, it has to be judged on Krishna's standards. So that's what Brahma found out. So we have to be able to give that up. You know what I'm saying? As long as one's working within that, that's why Manu is there, because then Manu gives standards by which you can adjudicate on the mundane platform. But it will be connectable to devotional service. That's why then the Daivavarna Ashram is used. Right? And once we go beyond that, we don't function, then it gives you a medium through which to engage in the Lord's service on the transcendental platform, since you are in a conditioned nature, you're not using your spiritual body. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that you're going to go take your bucket and go down to the Jamuna and fill it up, you know, the water for Krishna's bath in the morning or something. So the point is that you use your spiritual body in the spiritual realm. Here you use the material body in the material realm. So therefore it works out advantageous for the liberated souls also. Right? And for the conditioned souls it's a great boon because they're going to get involved in all this sensual and political and emotional platforms anyway, so then might as well do it according to God's direction so that it becomes it can be brought to the stage of favorableness to the Lord. Does that make sense? But you'll generally find those that are most into transparency and all these new speak terms are the ones that are most against the Vedic system, because by the Vedic system they would be wrong. So only in their own made-up system are they right. Does that make sense? So that's why it's called atheistic, because it's not in line with the theology as given by Krishna. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's why we don't take shelter of these things. And by one's conditioning, one may have them and act on that naturally, and if it doesn't come up, it happens, but as soon as it's pointed out, one should start to contemplate and try to improve the quality of one's service. Like that. But if you hold on to it and try to defend it, then you're simply defending a useless platform, because there is no set. Both liberation and bondage are unreal. For it is only from the living entity's conditioned outlook that his bondage and liberation are produced. But he's already liberated, but he thinks he's conditioned. Therefore, then, because of that, there's bad. And if I do right, then I will liberate myself. But the soul's already liberated. It's just he's thinking he's material. Right? We think we're the body, but we're not the body. Is that...
When the impersonal man is emerged in the impersonal Brahman, we have the realization of the subtle aspect of the Lord. So even is that unreal?
Is that?
Unreal.
Unreal. Is the Jnani merging into Brahman, which is the Sat aspect of the Lord, is that unreal? Mm. Have they merged in Brahman? Have they merged in Brahman?
Not really.
No, not really. The easiest answer is no. You understand when we say, well, you know, according to, that's their conditioning. Well, not really, that's their conditioning. No, that's the fact. So they're a living entity floating in Brahman. So they're still the living entity, and Brahman's still Brahman. So where's the merging? Right? Has your sofa merged into your house? You understand? No. It's existing there. From outside, you may think it's merged. Right? They see the big U-Haul truck pull up, and then so much thing is being pulled out of the truck, you know, all the furniture going into the house. So then one is thinking, oh, all this is merging into the house. But floating, yeah. Floating and merging is two different things. Merging means it becomes one thing. Here, Brahman is still the unlimited Brahman. The Jiva, 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, is still 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. You know what I'm saying? Without a spiritual body, that's the size. Doesn't matter if it's no body, material body, that's the size. Does that make sense? It doesn't merge. It's still separate. So, it is an illusion to think they're liberated. You're not catching the point.
The realization eternal.
It's eternal, but is the soul only eternal? What about Chit-Ananda?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a partial realization.
Partial realization, but then where do they end up?
Again, back to
the material world. So is that a real realization? Just like we were saying, the businessman, you know, something happens, he makes a certain trade on the stock market. Today he goes from just being an ordinary guy into being a multi-millionaire. And he's in ecstasy, they're getting out of the champagne and all that. And then in the evening the stocks crash. And now he has less money than he did in the morning when the market opened. So do we call him rich? Yes or no? No. But he can say, I had 100 million there for, 6 hours. Can he call himself rich? No. So they merge into Brahman for, who knows how long, a breath of Mahavishnu or something. Whoopee. Can they call themselves liberated? Yeah. So you have to see it from Krishna's perspective. Because the confusion comes up because you're still looking at it from the conditioned perspective. So from the conditioned perspective, no, they've liberated themselves. They've freed themselves from bondage. Is that what I'm saying? But from the transcendental viewpoint, what's this moment, what's the big deal, They come along and gone, Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so it's like in the reverse, they bungee jump off of bridges, and there's the water down below, and their head goes into the water. So from the fish's perspective, this guy's here in the water, and then he's gone again. So is he really, can he call himself an aquatic? No. Okay, so, yeah.
About the earlier point that the cure for somebody's bad habits or otherwise is your service itself, to engage him again and again. Right. Last year you mentioned the point that you do know that below Mangal Thakur would not be allowed to do service in our society.
Yeah, no, most of the people in the Bhagavatam wouldn't be allowed to do service. It's uncool, right? What's his name? 10 million wives? Where do you even put them up? You know what I'm saying? Could you imagine? Okay. What was his name? Chitraketu. Chitraketu's, big Kshatriya emperor of the world. He agrees to be the temple president. Where's he going to put 10 million wives like that? What temple wants it? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. His wives killed his son. We don't want that kind of people in our neighborhood. The rents will go down. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is there's practically no one that we would agree with. What about the king who keeps turning back and forth between a man and a woman? Okay, maybe he can do, LBGT preaching or something, like that. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is where is it, how will we accommodate? Because we're so stuck on our specific conditioning that judgment based on that conditioning is the only way we can see. And anything different from that we can't accommodate, even though we claim that we're quite broad liberal. But the actual point is we can't accept anything outside of our own status quo. And with time that status quo is getting more and more narrow, because people are less and less eclectic. So the areas that they come across are less and less. Thinking the personal form of Lord Krishna illusory, fools reject his lotus feet and look elsewhere to find the Supreme Self. But the futility of their search is the obvious proof of their foolishness, right? Because they're looking elsewhere. They found Krishna, but then look elsewhere. Do they find any alternative? Never. So that should be proof that it's foolish to look elsewhere. Because Krishna is there, everybody tells about him. Yeah, what's that?
It's similar to Maradona, the Lord.
Yes. So the Naradama, he looks elsewhere and never comes up with it. So that's the most foolish. Right? Saying like a donkey. A donkey's, not known for super intelligence like that. But they're a donkey. But if a person is like a donkey, you'll consider that worse. Right? You understand? So the same way as the mudha, the human who just goes around with blinders on, just doing what he does and thinks that that's all there is. But then someone who actually thinks, no, we can improve this place, we can make it fabulous, that's worse. So. There is simply no way to understand the truth of the personality of Godhead without His mercy. Having established this conclusion, Lord Brahma analyzed the great fortune, the great good fortune of the residents of Braja, and then personally prayed to be born there even as a blade of grass, a bush, or a creeper. Indeed, the homes of the residents of Vrindavan are not prisons of material existence, but rather abodes envied even by the jnanis and yogis. On the other hand, any home without a connection to Lord Krishna is in fact a prison cell of material existence. Finally, Brahma offered his whole self at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and praised him again and again, circumambulated him, and took his leave. Lord Krishna then gathered the animals Brahma stole and led them to the place on the Jamuna's bank where the cowherd boys had been taking lunch. The same friends who had been present before were sitting there now. By the power of Krishna's illusory energy, they were not aware of what had happened. Thus, when Krishna arrived with the cows, the boys told him, "You have returned so quickly." "Very good. As long as you were gone, we couldn't take even a morsel of food, so come and eat." Laughing at the words of the cowherd boys, Lord Krishna began taking his meal in their company. While eating, Krishna pointed out to his young friends the skin of the python. And the boys thought, "Krishna has just now killed this terrible snake." Indeed, later they related to the residents of Vrindavan the incident of Krishna's killing the Agha demon. In this way, the cowherd boys described pastimes that Lord Krishna had performed in his Balya age, 1 to 5, even though his Pauganda age, 6 to 10, had begun. Sukadeva Goswami concludes this chapter by explaining how the gopis loved Lord Krishna even more than they loved their own sons. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 41, Lord Brahma's prayers, 42 to 48, Sri Krishna resumes his pastime. 49 to 61, Krishna is dearer than one's own self. I think that where they're dearer than one's own self, that's a symptom of sneha. I think that's what, in the development of prema, then sneha, I think the quality of that is someone's more dear than your own life. Lord Brahma's prayers. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the King of the Cowherds, your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja, earrings, and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves and equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand." Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "After having obtained firm devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, realizing directly the son of the cowherd king is the source of all forms of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, Brahma began to praise Krishna profusely." This description reveals the superiority of the gunja berries of Vrindavan to the jewels of Vaikuntha. The forest garland around his neck, made of local leaves and flowers, is superior to those made of flowers of the Parijata from the Swarga Loka. By mentioning the curd rice in his hand, his stick and horn, Brahma indicates the superiority of the appearance of the cowherd boy over all others. In mentioning his soft feet, he indicates that those wandering in the forest become filled with ecstasy on seeing those footprints. Mentioning that Krishna is the son of a cowherd, he indicates that the superior fortune of Nanda over Vasudeva. Right? So he's pointing out the difference between Krishna and Aishwarya and Krishna's sweetness and the superiority of the position of sweetness. So on all these different realms, by his form that he has, by how he dresses, by his ornamentation. Right? So like this. So in Vrindavan he always goes barefoot. From what I understand from this, then Vaikuntha he would be wearing his shoes. So, and there everything's pukka anyway, right? It's palaces and everything, so you're not going to see any footprints there. But in Vrindavan, then you're always going to see the Lord's footprints everywhere. So it's a superior place, yes. When Brahmaji wrote the Brahma Samhita, he was on the Bhava. How are we determining he's on the platform of Bhava? On the same lines of Bharat Maharaj, but I mean, what are we?
Because if he would have been on the Prem, then this would not have happened. Because usually from the Prem, one does not.
So if one's on the platform, okay. So you're saying that he's on the platform of Bhava and not Prema, because otherwise he couldn't come under illusion. Is that so? So does that mean Arjuna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita was on the platform of Bhava and not Prema? You understand? So we have to see is what do the acharyas say and what's the point? When it comes to learning about the position of even an Uttamadikara, if he hasn't come to Prema, then one has to be very careful still. Right? That we learn from Bharat Maharaj. That's not what we learn from Brahma. Brahma we're learning about doesn't matter about your position, your knowledge, because what is Brahma? Bharat Maharaj is known as a devotee. He's a practicing devotee. He's not an emperor, he's not a king, he's not this, that, he's just a devotee, right? But Brahma is the creator of the universe, right? He is the head demigod. He is the most intelligent, most powerful, right? So, then from that, then you can only know Krishna by, right? That was what the pratigya is, right? So that's the whole point is, that's the angle that we take here. Not that you can't find other angles, but why take other angles when this is the angle being given? Means if it comes up, yes, you can tie it back into that. But the whole point is why is that the important point? Right? Because it says here, firmly fixed. Right? In devotional service. Right? After having attained firm devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, realizing directly the son of the cowherd king is the source of all forms of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, Brahma began to praise Krishna profusely. That makes sense. So, he's fixed there in Krishna's service. So whether that means prema, whether that means bhava, whether that means nishta, you know what I'm saying? It's not important. The important part is being fixed in Krishna's service. That we have to take from it. So that makes sense. Yeah? And so then he's showing the realm, how Vrindavan's superior, the residents are superior, his ornaments, his form, the pastimes, the affection, all that superior to Vaikuntha. Because now they're always engaged in. I mean, the degree of love is so much greater. Yes.
It's interesting that here, you know, this idea that there's actually nothing new. Here we have Brahma, who's like the biggest administrator in creation. And he's fallen victim to this mentality of looking at the skill.
Mm-hmm.
And then now realizing that actually it's not the skill, it's the person behind the skill.
Yes.
And then appreciating not just the skill, but actually appreciating all the ways seeing that the person themselves are in that way. So you see that where we go wrong in the modern is exactly the same thing. We just do the same thing. We look at the skill, or we look at the opulence, or we try and look at the separate things, we don't actually look at the person.
Yeah. Yeah, we take the secondary as the main thing. Well, here he's looking at Krishna's position. He's killed the demons, so the secondary aspects of his power. And so how do they compare to his power? So he's missing the point of the primary, which is Krishna being the origin of everything, and it goes according to his desire. And therefore, then, if you're going to relate to that, then through devotion, then you can understand. So that's not what he's come to realize. Yes, as long as we put our focus on the secondary, we'll always have problem. And if we, as we bring it to the primary, then the problem then starts to rectify itself. That's why we're saying, since the the conditioning and liberation are aspects of secondary aspects of the soul, and therefore they're based on the further secondary of illusion, then it doesn't actually have any, it's not a platform of focus. The only value is if you connect it to Krishna. Right? Let's say I have an Artik lamp. Okay? What's its value other than it's offering Artik to Krishna? Does that make sense? Right? So that's the whole point, is that the whole material world doesn't. Now one can say, no, but it has value. Yes. The thief will also say the Artik lamp has plenty of value without offering Artik to Krishna. But that's the whole point. Is there a criminal? So the criminal mind will see value in the material world. But in actuality, the self-realized soul doesn't see the value. Does that make sense? So its only value is its ability to be connected to Krishna. So that's why, since connecting to Krishna becomes a value, the residents of the spiritual world don't have a problem coming here to serve Krishna, because they do the same thing they do in the spiritual world. It's just cooking in an inferior kitchen. Just like, let's say, the top chef, he has a fabulous kitchen with all the best ingredients and best assistants. Right? And that's his natural state that he functions in. But let's say to do some pro bono work, right? He's going to go to some local community hall to teach some cooking to local residents. So the kitchen's going to be inferior, the ingredients are going to be inferior, and the assistance is going to be inferior. Right? But because of his connection to cooking goes on. And these people are benefited, and then they can slowly come up to a higher standard. You understand? But to go to a kitchen that's not for cooking or can't cook, let's say you have this fabulous kitchen, the gas is not connected, the electricity is not connected, does that make sense? So then you can't use it. The refrigerator's not turned on. So you can't do anything. Therefore, it's of no value unless it's connected. So in the same way is that the material world's only value is its ability to be connected to Krishna. And therefore, we take that, since it's about the material world's ability to be connected to Krishna that has its value, then what's the best way to connect it? Through the Vedic version. Is that shows directly how it can be connected. While if we use the modern, then unless you know the direct, how do you know if you've actually connected it? We'll say we've connected it, but have we actually? Or how well is it connected? You know what I'm saying? The guy got a hole in his tire and we put some duct tape on it. So we may say it's fixed. By whose standard? Right? The hillbilly standard. Does that make sense? And if people say it's not good enough, we'll put a rag around it also. Okay. In his Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 100, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, because they were aware of the Supreme Lord's sweetness, the cowherd people became the most wise philosophers, paramajnani. The demigod Brahma, who had personally seen numberless four-armed forms of the Lord, specifically took shelter of the form of Lord Krishna. Right? Because he's taken that, but because he hadn't actually taken shelter of Krishna, then when he saw Krishna, he was bewildered by the position. And so it's only by Krishna's grace you can understand Krishna. So then, now, seeing all this, then he understood. Then he took shelter of Krishna. Then he has this realization. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur provides the following preface to the next verse. Krishna's objection. Hear me, Lord Brahma. You are the master of all powers in this universe, while I am but the son of a forest cowherd man. You are an ancient figure, and I am but a small boy. You are knowledgeable of all the Vedas and endowed with the highest conduct, whereas I, as a keeper of the cows, am ignorant, without knowledge of proper conduct, so that I even run around with some yogurt rice in my hand. Right? You know, it's supposed to be on a plate, right? He's just running around with it in his hand. You are the Supreme Lord, controller of all illusion, full of bliss, whereas I am bewildered by your illusion and wander about the forest in grief for lost calves. Thus I am not qualified for your praise. Fearing such objections from Krishna, Rama began to speak, revealing his repentance for committing offense to Krishna out of ignorance. Right? So he's just mentioned all these things to establish Krishna's position as higher than that of his manifestation in Vaikuntha. But now, fearing that Krishna will rebuff these points, now he says this next point. Right? Because he takes it point by point, showing how Brahma's position is so much greater. Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form." Right? So he's not actually involved in personal affairs, because as an administrator of the universe, they're administrators, but actually the administration is being done by Brahma, by Indra. Like that, he just oversees. In other words, Indra is the managing authority, right? Does that make sense? He is the managing authority. Right? Catch the words here. They call it "read my lips." Okay. Now Brahma sees to the standard by which Indra does this management. Therefore, he is the managerial authority of the managerial authority. In other words, the ultimate managerial authority. Does that make sense? Sorry?
This position is
brahminical. So in the Vedic system, the top, the ultimate managerial authority is brahminical. Because what do? They have to see to the standards being performed by those who are the actual direct taking responsibility of the management. So in other words, the managers take responsibility for all the management within the society, or in this case, the demigods for the universe. And then the Brahmins above them, they take responsibility to see that they're acting according to the standard. They don't take responsibility of the management. They take responsibility of seeing that the people there are responsible. Of course, if someone's not there for some temporary reason, they can do it. But that's not their job. Just like Krishna, if there's not a soul qualified to be a particular demigod, Krishna does it himself. But as soon as there's someone qualified, immediately then they're put into that position. That's how authority works in the Vedic system. That's how the universe works, that's how the kings work, that's how everything works. Does that make sense? So it has to be clear what that means. So there is that position. And so then Brahma's in that position, but he's trying to point, although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, he's not absorbed in material affairs. Indra is. That's why those above Indra Loka, they're withdrawn from material affairs. But it's not that they don't give direction for those who are. I cannot understand your personal form, right? Even though I'm withdrawn from the material, I still can't understand the spiritual. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? Right? I can't even understand your form, let alone what you experience. In his Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this prayer. Your appearance as a cowherd child is for the benefit of the devotees. And although I have committed an offense at your lotus feet by stealing away your boys and calves, I can understand that you have bestowed your mercy upon me. That is your transcendental quality. You are very affectionate towards your devotees. But in spite of your great affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Right? Because he performs the pastimes just because they make him happy. Right? That's the only reason. He's not forced to do all the... Brahma has to do his duties. Right? Shiva has to do his duties. Krishna doesn't have any duties. He can do whatever he likes. So what he likes is interacting with the devotees. That's why he takes care of those things. And then managing the universe, that Brahma and everybody else does. That's Lord Brahma continued, those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind offer all respect to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. Right, so, only by devotion is Krishna conquered. He can't be conquered any other way. It's not possible because everything's within him. So what thing smaller than him can conquer him? So the only thing is devotion. That's the only thing that can conquer him. In the BBT purport, it is said, here the word Udapasya clearly indicates that one should not even slightly endeavor to understand the absolute truth by the process of mental speculation, for it invariably carries one to an imperfect, impersonal understanding of God. The word Jivanti indicates that a devotee who always hears about Lord Krishna will go back home, back to Godhead, even if he can do nothing except maintain his existence and hear topics concerning the Lord. Srila Sanatana Goswami has explained the words Tanuvan Manobihi, by the body, words, and mind, in three ways. In reference to devotees, through their body, words, and mind, they are able to conquer Lord Krishna, thus becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness. They can touch his lotus feet with their hands, call him to come with their words, and attain his direct audience with their mind, simply by thinking about him. In case of the non-devotees, Tanuvan Manobihi refers to the word ajita, unconquered, and indicate that those not engaged in the loving service of the Lord cannot conquer the absolute truth by their bodily strength, verbal expertise, or mental power, despite all their endeavors. The ultimate truth remains beyond their reach. Footnote 26. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Bhagavad Gita 9:12. Right? So we have to be careful that our conditioning doesn't allow us to become distracted by all these mundane concepts. Right? No matter how nicely they are worded. We still have to be careful. In reference to the word jitaha, conquered, the words tanuvan manobihi indicate that the pure devotees of Lord Krishna conquer his body, words, and mind. So the devotees' body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service, and by that service they conquer the Lord's body, mind, and words. But the non-devotees, they only become conquered themselves by the modes of nature. They have nothing to do with actually even understanding the Lord. So there's nothing they can do with their body, mind, and words to know the Lord. Lord Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotees. Lord Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of his devotees. And Lord Krishna's mind is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees. So very nice points here, right? Because the whole idea is about body, mind, and words and being engaged, right? So the devotees then can touch his lotus feet with their hands, call him to come with their words and attain direct audience within their mind simply by thinking. And for Krishna, Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of the devotee. That's why they can touch him. Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of the Lord. And they're always then interacting, calling the Lord. And the Lord's mind is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees like the devotees always think about the Lord. Right? Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "By performing one among the many methods of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting, the jiva can achieve success. This is stated in the Nrisinga Purana. The devotees easily attain the Lord by worshipping with devotion, using leaves, flowers, fruit, and water, which are easily available," right? Because the idea is, what is available, that's what you use. So if what's available for you is, Iranian saffron, then that's what you use for Krishna. And if it's not, it's what you get over here at the CPD, then that's what you use for Krishna. You understand? It's what's easily available to you. So leaf, flower, fruit, water doesn't mean that that's all he wants. I can get so many nice things. I only cook those for myself. For Krishna, I just give him a fruit, flower, leaf, and water because that's all he asked for. Hey, you know, what can I do? If he wanted more, he should have said. You know, if he wanted chapatis, he should have mentioned it. Right? So that's not proper thinking. It means he's easily worshipped by anyone. So therefore, with whatever's available, that's what you offer. Does that make sense? Yes.
We make that mistake because we focus not on the second part of the slogan, which is the devotion. So we focus on the item. So that's where it
gets. Yes, it's just like I always remember. Yeah, you understand? It means the first half of the shloka says this, but the second half that it should be offered in devotion, that part we finesse. Just like I remember in the 70s, 80s, when you go into the rich gentleman's office in Calcutta or Bombay or wherever you're going to the office, and you start talking about devotional service and doing something, then, you know, or, you know, be involved, then the first thing they'll always quote, guaranteed, every last gentleman, I think it may be the only verse they know, you know, what is Carmen? Karmaneva Dikadaste Mahapalesh Kadacha. No, they only quote the first one. You have a right to do your duty. Why are you telling me to give all this up and become a devotee? What about you're not entitled to be attached to the results of your action? That one they never quote. Never. So like that, yeah, we have to be careful of only using that part of the verse that we like, and I say the golden egg, half of the duck, right?
Work is worship.
Work is worship, yes. Yeah. They have a few good ones.
And why do you make efforts for liberation?
Okay, so the devotees easily attain the Lord by worshipping with devotion using leaves, flowers, fruit, and water, which are easily available. Then why do you make efforts for liberation? Though this is so, those who reject bhakti and make efforts in jnana gain only a lot of suffering. This is the intention of the verse. Right? So, therefore, the karmis are going through suffering, but because of their conditioning, they don't notice it so much. But if the devotees give up devotional service and take up speculation and like this, then they just get trouble. That's all. That's it. Those who reject the path of auspiciousness, the stream of bhakti flowing like a river of honey, commentary by Srila Sridhar Swami, achieve only suffering. Shreya also refers to all the fruits of all other processes, such as jnana and karma. Right? So it's all other things. It includes whatever path of religion you may follow, or irreligion. The point is it's only going. The only benefit you get is the trouble that you went to go through it. Bhakti is the path which gives all these fruits, and thus called the Shreya Shritim. The jnana of those who reject bhakti gives only suffering, klesha, klesha la. Okay. So a grumpy old spinster who always complains and is always miserable, then you could call her a kleshala. Hey, kleshala. Instead of boobalo. So all the fruits of all the processes, you only get the trouble because you'll get the result. Yes. But the point is, it won't give you any satisfaction. Because we only projected that the result is going to make us happy. But the point is it's only the moment of gaining that result, then you can say, I'm happy. Because at the next moment, you already have it, so you're not gaining it, so how can you be happy? You can be satisfied, but that's not... No one wants that. Who wants satisfaction? Right? You know, the economy would collapse, right? So... You know, I'm doing my job. I'm supporting the internet, the world economic community, right? So, therefore, then it's only the trouble that you really get from it, because you have the thing, but there's no happiness. But if you're engaging all these religious processes in devotional service, then all of those things, they give transcendental results. So, therefore, they actually give happiness. And the secondary results that they give anyway, you have them, and then it's just more opportunity to use them in Krishna service. So you're happy that you have something for using Krishna service. If it's about Krishna service, you're happy. You can always be happy you have it. And then you use it, you're more happy. But it's about, by getting it, I'll be happy. When I've already got it, how it will make me happy. Right? Only when I forget about it, and then after some time I find it in the closet again, then there's a moment of happiness. Oh, I found it! Yeah! And then you forget it. Right? That's why materialists have so many closets. That way they can keep refining things and reliving their happiness. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the previous two verses, bhakti is established as the means of attaining the Lord by negation and positive statements. In the next verse, the activities of bhakti are established. Right, so the glories that the devotees get by devotional service and the position they have, then that's wonderful. So that's the positive. And that the karmis, by their karma and jnan, can't understand the Lord, then it's only by the devotion we see that the devotees have, then you get something. So that's the negative and the positive.
Maharaj, So here it means that it says that bhakti is established as the means of attaining the Lord by negation and positive statements. So it means now the next activities of
Abhideya
speaking spoken
up
like that.
Yes, okay. That you're establishing the position of it. Yes, the Sambandha, and now we'll get into the Abhideya. Yes. Yeah. Lord Brahma continued. O Almighty Lord, in the past many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out the prescribed duties. Through such devotional service, perfected by the devotees of hearing and chanting about you.
No, by the processes of hearing and chanting.
What did I say?
Devotees.
Oh, through such... Devotees are in there somewhere. Wow. Okay. Through such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O Infallible One, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. Non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachment to material sense objects. Because even though they can cultivate this, like we said, that the materialists can come to this understanding, but they have to remove their material concepts. So they may get a glimpse here and there, but they won't be able to be consistent in that unless they purify themselves. So only by following the Vedic process of jnana as given can they come to that as a consistent position. But then the inconsistency is that what's beyond that? Why would the soul care? If we're all liberated Brahman anyway, why does it matter that we need to become liberated? So again, it still holds that it's an illusion that we're bound. So if it's an illusion that we're bound, then there's no need to remove the illusion because it doesn't exist anyway. You know what I'm saying? So it just gets really weird. So, yeah. So it's just by, yeah. So we see here just by devotional service. So we see here the example then being given is that the karmis and jnanis can't attain the Lord. The devotees always have the Lord, only through that devotion. And then we see the process, how they're always hearing and chanting. And that's then what how they're going to apply it. So that's what we have to do in seeing and analyzing. Then we see what is the sambandha, what's the abhideya, what's the prayojana. But then that's the that technically altogether that's called what is it?
Vastutraya.
Vastutraya, but the where it is in there? Sambandha jnana, yes. The sambandha jnana means you understand the jnana of sambandha abhideya and prayojana. Then having that jnana, you're going to apply it in abhideya, in bhakti. And then get the prayojana, Krishna's pleasure. So, that we're understanding sambandha jnana in relationship to Krishna, then that is also devotional service. But it's the first step. But when it's applied, that's when it becomes dynamic. Otherwise, it's only appreciated. That's the shantaras. So then the next stage is applying it and actually as servant to the Lord. Does that make sense? So in the beginning, we may just catch that the process is there, but we have to go on after catching to understand that we have to apply it. So this shows that, yes, in our contemplation, devotional service is the only thing. And application of that devotional service is the only thing. Because it says only through devotional service can you understand the Lord. So I've understood that only through devotional service you can understand the Lord, but I still have to apply it in devotional service to understand the Lord. Is it right? But it's the first step. So it's important. Rather than we can't even understand it at all or don't even care. So that we're able to see and analyze and that's good. But we have to be able to take the next step. Right? Does that make sense? Because we see is that he's put it at this point. Why? Because if he puts it before, we'll only catch the sambandha aspects. We won't catch the abhideya. So he's put it after the sambandha, showing that the previous was sambandha. Now it'll talk about abhideya. So we actually focus more on applying it. Is that? Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to...
Only in this way
will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended to onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities. The BBT purport states, Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Lord Krishna is Gunatma, the soul of all superior qualities, because he gives them life. Right? So this Brahman effulgence is the effulgence of Krishna's good qualities. So any qualities you see anywhere are based on his qualities, right? Because Brahman is all-pervading. Those qualities are then what the material creation is based on. The material creation is based on the Brahman effulgence. So all those qualities, unlimited qualities of Brahman, those to some degree are there in the material manifestation. Therefore, the manifestations, the material phenomena, has qualities. So it's because of Brahman they have qualities, not that you know, Brahman has no qualities. Otherwise, where would anything else get qualities? Right? But the important point is not that the material world has the quality, it's that Krishna has the original quality. So whatever you're looking for, it's originally in Krishna. That's the actual point. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai. Jai. Jai.